On Sunday, September 23rd, between 12 and 6 p.m., is the 44th Annual Atlantic Antic. Come join some of your favorite WBAI producers in front of 388 Atlantic Avenue for the oldest and largest street festival in Brooklyn, New York. We will be offering greatly reduced price WBAI merchandise, including DVDs, CDs, and books. The festival is free and family-friendly. That's this Sunday from 12 to 6 p.m. We hope to see you there.
And you are listening to radio station WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York, WBAI.org on the web, and the time is just about 8 p.m. on a Wednesday night. That means it's time for Off the Hook. Very good evening to you. This program is Off the Hook. Rob T. Firefly here with you, and I'm joined in the studio by nobody, no one, not a soul apart from me. But I am joined on the telephone by Emmanuel and Kyle. Are you there, guys?
We barely hear you. Hopefully you can hear us.
I can hear you. Yes. How's that? Is that any better?
Yes, it is better.
Okay,
yeah, I can hear.
Very cool.
Wow. So nobody's there, huh, Rob?
Nobody, unless you count me, and someone else if you count me twice. But no, just me here. The rest of you guys.
I feel like I have to apologize because I just as a social experiment, I spread some really nasty rumors about you earlier.
Oh well, that explains
and
a lot.
Apparently, they landed because nobody wants to be within a mile of you.
Typical. That's what I call. Usually, that's what happens to me on Thursdays. But Wednesday is a novelty. But
folks, if whatever I told you, it was just a joke. So please gather around again.
Okay. Well, I'll need that in writing and a copy filed with my lawyer. But before we do that, there is a lot to talk about because this is a very special week. Today is Talk Like a Pirate Day, so, yo-ho-ho, et cetera.
Oh, my God, I hate that day so much. I'm sorry, I just do.
Well, you're not here to stop me, so, this is what happens. It's also, we've got something coming up this weekend. What have we got coming up, Emmanuel?
Oh, yes, that's right, this weekend, maybe I should tell the story. We intend to be at World Maker Faire in Queens this weekend because it's that time of year again, and it's always a blast. We're going to have a special guest on in just a few minutes to talk all about it, and we'll have an opportunity later in the show for you guys listening to win a couple of tickets. We were preparing the 2600 van, the old phone company van, along with the old 1950s payphone booth to be present again at World Maker Faire. The van engaged in some civil disobedience yesterday and refused to move. So right now, the van is being worked upon to make it possible for us to be there this weekend. I don't want to say it's touch and go. It's not minimal. It's something that we really have to make sure is taken care of and that we get this thing fixed. That's why we're not here tonight, because we had to deal with that. And we're going to have to deal with that all day tomorrow and possibly a good part of Friday as well. So we're going to do everything we possibly can to get the van there by the weekend, because Maker Faire is awesome. We will be moving, what's the phrase, Kyle, hell and high earth, or?
Floodwater.
Floodwater, we'll do all kinds of.
We're undeterred.
Yeah, we're going to do everything we possibly can to get there. So, folks, if you're thinking of going to Maker Faire, you should do everything you can to get there as well, because it's the event that you remember for the whole year until next year when you do it again.
Get there safely, too.
Yes, so we're going to try to do that.
Absolutely. And as you said, we'll be talking more about that in a little bit. We could talk about a couple of other things that have been in the news this week. How's the news been where you are?
Oh, we've been following a bunch of things because, you know, we always pay attention. Even though everything is falling apart around us, we still pay attention to what's going on in the world. And I think that's important to do that. One of the things that kind of struck me that I thought was highly amusing, this was supposed to happen tomorrow. They were going to run a test of that feature on all of our cell phones called the presidential alert. This is the one you can't turn off.
Right.
So what they were going to do tomorrow afternoon was basically send a test message that would go to every single cell phone in the United States. This has never been done before. That feature exists, and while you can get emergency alerts and amber alerts and things like that, you're always able to turn those off. This is something you cannot turn off. What the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, was going to do was test the system on Thursday, tomorrow. But because of Florence, of the Hurricane Florence and the aftermath, they decided that probably wouldn't be a good idea. So they're pushing it back to, I believe, October 3rd, 2 weeks from today. So that's going to be something really interesting, something I think it's an awful thing, and maybe now we don't see the danger, but if one day, say, we had a president that liked to hear himself talk and was irresponsible and maybe even a little incompetent, a general blowhard, somebody who never knows when to shut up and always says the wrong thing at the wrong time, if we ever got somebody like that in the White House, it's possible they could abuse a system like this. And so, I fear for the future, I think I'm fearing for October 3rd. It's going to be interesting, though, when that happens, assuming they don't chicken out.
Yeah, I'm really curious about phones that aren't even subscribed. In other words, ones that can make emergency calls. I noticed on a phone I have that doesn't have a SIM or any provider, I got a weather warning when there was some of the storm and flood stuff going on that phone. I'm really curious that all phones everywhere will be getting these messages, whether they are subscribed or not. And that's kind of interesting, considering the preferred method for our president, you sort of have to follow him on that particular platform. And this is something that you could not escape, and will be really interesting to see what kinds of messages, and as you said, how will that be used? And, God forbid, or, how do we feel about it? Yeah, it's something really interesting.
Right. Could you imagine the current president having an open line to everyone with a phone in the country and using it responsibly?
Honestly, Rob, it would be the worst thing to happen to the cell phone industry. I think subscriptions would fall dramatically. Yeah, but honestly, as a fan of landlines, and we are, this, by the way, is a conversation landline to landline. You might notice it sounds better than most interviews you hear on CNN. I think landlines would prosper as a result of this because they certainly wouldn't be getting these alerts.
Yeah, it's amazing. But, they're pushing the test back, and we'll see what happens. I know there have been some chatter online about how one might avoid this, and I think most of the methods out there that people are kicking around generally seem to be just turn your phone off for about a half an hour at the appropriate time, because if your phone is off or if you're in a call, then you're going to get it the next time your phone is on and free. So apparently the theory is that if you leave it off for the full half hour, it will stop trying to give you the alert.
So are you saying that if you turn your phone off,
mm-hmm.
and keep it off and turn it back on, the alert will not show up, or will it show up when you turn the phone on?
Apparently, it will show up when you turn the phone on, unless you keep your phone off for a full half hour, I think. I think that has been put forth. I don't know by whom or by what authority they say this, but the theory seems to be that it will keep trying to give you the alert for about a half hour.
Right, so the transmission is sort of cached, but only in sort of a limited way.
Well, Kyle, when you got the flood warning today, it was a flood warning from last week. Was it because you just turned that phone on, or was it sitting around for a week waiting for you to notice?
No, it was the first time I had checked it. So, yeah, it was really, it reminded me. I was like, oh, wow, okay. So even phones, yes, it was on, but it's not connected to any sort of wireless at all, whether registered or connected, like over Wi-Fi. So it had basically received messages through its baseband receiver from, I guess, the same E911 or transmission scheme that you would use to make an emergency call in an unregistered SIM-less phone. So if you're curious, people, if you're not trying to avoid it, charge up your old phones and see what happens. We'd love to hear what kind of gatherings or results are come about.
Two of the more popular plans that I'm seeing people discussing right now is simply canceling their cellular plan about an hour or so before the alert is scheduled to go out, and then applying for a new account with a new phone number and everything about a half hour afterwards. So that's another way to avoid it. The other popular way is actually aborting a flight and leaving the country and staying there for at least a couple of hours and then coming back after the alert has been finished. These are ways you might be able to, it's not proven yet because it hasn't happened, but these are possible ways of avoiding hearing the presidential alert when it comes forth in 2 weeks.
And if nothing else, travel does broaden the mind, so you've got that going for you.
Yeah, you can also put it in the microwave for like maybe 15 minutes while it's being sent, probably like on high, I think would be good.
It's going to be interesting. It'll be an historic event, that's for sure. But, you know, there have been many historic events, and I'll tell you, you know, when you have 60, 70 homes blowing up in the Boston area, that's kind of a historic event as well, and all sorts of things have been coming out of that. I saw an article concerning things that were happening during this unfortunate event. Basically, Massachusetts State Police posted to Twitter a map of responses to fires and explosions to sort of demonstrate how large an area this was covering, how many homes were affected. And basically what it was an image of a computer monitor that showed the locations of 39 incidents as confirmed by what they call MSP Watch Center. And it included a message saying, reminder all residents of Lawrence/Andover/North Andover who have Columbia gas must evacuate, as should anyone else who smells gas. But that wasn't all the image showed. It showed something else. It showed a bookmarks bar at the top of the browser window, which listed several left-wing groups. Yeah, they included a Facebook group for mass action against police brutality, the Coalition to Organize and Mobilize Boston Against Trump, Facebook MA Activism, the Resistance Calendar, which basically notes timings for canvassing for Democratic or progressive candidates and anti-Trump rallies. The State Police's official Twitter account shared that image at 6:26 p.m. Less than half an hour later, it deleted it and shared a new one, which had been cropped. But the first tweet had already drawn the attention of activists and reporters who shared screenshots and began a social media debate about online police surveillance. I just love it when the police inadvertently show their hand as to what it is they're actually doing.
See, now, with that, we're just assuming the worst. I mean, this could just be someone working at the police department who also happens to be a very active left-wing activist and is Facebooking from work, which you probably aren't supposed to do. But, you know, maybe there's an innocent explanation for all this, like there was for Alex Jones's other tab in his phone a few weeks ago.
You mean to tell me they only had one tab for this massive explosion and, like, six other tabs for political monitoring? I mean, it seems like they're awful preoccupied, and the people are getting blown out of their homes. I mean, they're kind of in the lurch, right? I mean, is that really what you're saying?
One must have priorities.
Wow.
Well, I, for one, am pleased that apparently there are no neo-Nazi or ultra-right-wing or supremacist groups in that area that the police were also monitoring. It must mean that that is not at all a problem.
It all seems to make perfect sense to me. Listen, if you guys, I think we should start talking about Maker Faire a bit, and I'm going to go get our guests on the line, so
okay,
I'll turn it over to you guys for a bit.
We will definitely start talking about Maker Faire amongst ourselves here. Kyle, we've been going to Maker Faire almost since the very beginning. Actually, I think I went to the first one, and you went to the one after that.
That's right.
And it is, for those who have never been a part of this, it takes place in by the New York Hall of Science, a whole outdoor area. If you've ever seen the two towers for the World's Fair, you know it's in that general vicinity. That's on the other side of the Grand Central Parkway. But basically, the whole area is taken over by tens of thousands of people, kids, adults, all interested in science, in building things. How would you describe the overall scene?
Oh man, I guess the thing you have to say from the beginning is it's a show and tell, right? It's a massive display of a kind of a cross between that of a science fair and show and tell, and this year I think there's even more things in the artistic realm than I've seen before. But yeah, it just is this interdisciplinary confluence of just fantastically passionate people that are into something, that use tools and use the resources available to them to create something that maybe helps them, helps other people. Does something fun, is beautiful in some way, and maybe incorporates technology or some greater problem, and maybe it's a demonstration of something that could help society, or maybe not. Maybe it's an aggravating robot just to remind people of what else is possible. But tons of robotics, tons of electronics, and art displays. Thoughtful stuff and enthusiasm at, around every corner. You have, like you said, multi-generations of people who are just starting out or people who are getting back into things and everything in between. And we've been doing it for some time. I remember you kind of sharing and getting me a little bit inspired, to say the least, and just realizing how much in what we do is influence. It's important, and how many projects make up the hacking that we do. You know, any hack may have a myriad of things to build and to create, tools and things to help you along the way. And it's a great reminder for me of just how often that spirit is involved in something I'm doing, and it really reinvigorates it every year, every time we go.
Absolutely. You know, it's just a reminder of how many cool people are out there doing really cool things. It's so inspirational. Now, I believe, Rob, you have our special guest?
I do not yet. We're having a little bit of difficulty connecting.
Well,
so.
we can go on. We can go on for quite some time. Because what you see is you basically see all kinds of gatherings of people who are involved in various projects, whether it's learning how to solder, whether it's building some kind of a robot or drone. The lockpicking people alone are there. People from Tool have come to many of these things, and you know, kids are learning how to pick locks, and that might sound like a dangerous thing, but actually it's a really incredible thing because you're learning how it all works, and you're learning how to design things and how to make things better. And I think that's the theme, not only of the hacker world, but of the maker world, and what you see displayed in a very healthy manner at the maker fairs that we've been to. And now, you know, World Maker Faire is what happens in Queens, but there are maker fairs all over the world. This just happens to be one of the biggest.
Yeah, I think they draw upon a lot of the smaller events and encourage people to visit the larger ones that have even bigger space and variety of things on display. And when I'm just noticing that, you know, the tools themselves are becoming are evolving into things that people are building, like 3D printing is something we've been talking about a little bit. I know Rob has been involved with a lot. But I'm seeing just in some of the events this year, just making your own small 3D printer, and instead of just using a 3D printer you have access to now, it's like, okay, yeah, you can just make one yourself and then go on and do more things with that. But that's something we've been watching just flourish and become incredibly common in you would use any tool. You know, it's something that people just integrate, whether it's an artistic way or just functional ways. These kinds of things that are kind of new to us are something that people are working with from the start. As I said, whether it's for artistic uses or to build, you know, functional items or both, and it's really exploded as far as just the interest and a variety of things that people can kind of get into, and I think everybody getting together also helps. You know, maybe you've been working on something really hard that's really specific, and, you know, you get to see somebody else doing something that maybe you're into too, but you just haven't, you've been so busy learning and teaching yourself about something that, you know, getting to see how far they got with it can be like a vicarious thing, you know?
I'm going to give a couple of examples, and Rob, I know you're trying to reach our guest. I think we're getting voicemail. Is that what's happening?
That is what's happening. So
okay.
I think maybe we'll try again in a
yeah,
few minutes.
A few minutes. I've sent them an email asking them to fix that. But there are so many things that we can focus on. I'm just looking at some of the things that are planned, featured makers for this weekend. This is what they call the magic wheelchair. Now, what magic wheelchair is, it pairs a kid with a build team and basically turns that kid's wheelchair into an incredible, epic costume. And, you know, I just see this kid riding what looks like a dragon, and it's just he's got the happiest look on his face. And according to them, the child experience is what it's like to be seen as simply a child in a cool costume. And you may not realize how amazingly important something like that is to a kid, but when you see them, you know, when you see the joy in their eyes with something like this, you understand the importance of projects like that. And you see that multiplied by so many when you attend an event like this. Now, Magic Wheelchair, it started with one father building a chair for his kid, and now there's a whole network of people doing this for kids all over the world. These things, they spread. A good idea just is planted, and it may not be something that makes you $1 million, but that doesn't make the idea any less valuable. You see so many things like that. Kyle, the bicycles alone, the kinds of bicycles that you see at Maker Faire.
Yeah, there's a variety of contraptions and transportation. There's always different trends and different things going on. People zooming around, as you said, kind of wacky bicycles and tricycles and motorized things, hoverboard type things and on and on and on. So you got to watch yourself while you're walking around. There's a lot of people, but I like to see that, you know, because someone who might consider a wheelchair is like, you know, an encumbrance, something that, you know, it's just something I have to live with, but they see themselves differently, and it's that imaginative thing of, you know, modifying, hacking something, making it your own, customizing it. Maybe it's just a bicycle, but you want computers and you want sensors and crazy lasers or whatever it is. You know, you can do that, and this is where you can get encouraged to do that. Now, the Power Wheel Racing is going to be back. That's the kids' electric cars are modified, and they race those around on a racetrack. I think it's basically a goal to keep it under a certain budget. Always a hit and always really lively. Another interesting one I saw was the Foldscope. It's a paper microscope that is ultra affordable, but it's designed to be able to fold down and take with you, but give you the same magnification of like a proper professional lab microscope. And I really like these kinds of things because it's kind of democratizing tools so that, you know, these instruments aren't left in kind of the lofty scientific academic towers, so to speak, but rather the people in the field that are doing research, that are looking at different things in the field, are able to just put something together right, you know, right there and examine and get back to work, in other words, and create and be empowered by having that portability and affordability that could actually go to really, really important research. And that's ingenuity to me. And the affordability of, across the board, just looking at things differently and making them more accessible, I think, is a strong, strong theme and a problem that I think everyone is really interested in.
Yeah, that's something that I've thought is so important in the spirit of events like Maker Faire, and it blows me away every time we go, is just that whole thing about inspiring not only the hacker maker community as it stands, but the young people who are basically the budding hackers, just starting to explore and see what they can do with the stuff to hand or what they can learn, and just doing all sorts of awesome things. There's going to be featured young makers at Maker Faire. There's a whole section. There's someone called Ray who builds Ray's robots, and this is a young person who is bringing a bunch of robots that she made, and another maker with something called Vistelli Labs who is presenting different projects and concepts, and just like looking at the pictures of this stuff, which we can't show you on the radio, unfortunately, but there's so much cool stuff going on and so many like really interesting and diverse people throwing in and showing off what they can do in this. I know Becky Button, who I met there last year, who had a project. She's a young hacker who had a project for Wi-Fi hacking sandals that you could just walk around in, and it would de-auth things that you walked near. And she's going to be back.
Wait, what? Hold on.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi sandals?
Yep. Wi-Fi sandals. Wi-Fi hacking sandals that were 3D printed sandals, basically, that had. I don't remember exactly what board she used, but basically the hardware in it to basically run Wi-Fi hacks while you're walking around, and it's you know, very stealthy, very cool, very non-standard use of the tech, and really, really, just really imaginative. And there's all sorts of meetups going on of different groups in the hacker maker community. There's classes, crafts, things on display, things you can get, and just some of the stuff that we have there, which I always enjoy. We've been known to bring old telephones and stuff, haven't we?
We have been known to do that. In fact, as I mentioned before, we bring our 1950s phone booths. I gotta tell you, you know, we spent a good part of last night, Kyle and myself, just hoisting this payphone booth from the 1950s into our 2600 former phone company van from the 1980s, and it is so heavy. That phone booth is so incredibly heavy. We almost got crushed a couple of times doing that, and then we got the thing into the van finally after a good half hour of pushing and diving for cover and figuring out our plan, only to find that the van wouldn't start. So we had to get that situation dealt with, and it's still being dealt with, as I mentioned, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that we can get the thing going by the time of Maker Faire. Even if we can't, Maker Faire is certainly an event worth going to. You know, whenever we go there, we meet so many people who have been at the Hope Conference, and we also meet so many people who listen to WBAI, and I think that is just an incredible mix of people who basically learn all sorts of things from each other and contribute all sorts of ideas, and it's, you know, it gives us enough to talk about for the whole remainder of the year. I mean, just, you know, 3D printing alone.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, one of the earlier Maker Faires, which, you know, we're talking less than 10 years, seeing a massive amount of 3D printers back when that was something that was fairly unheard of. And now it's something that everybody is talking about, and you just see continued advances and imagination and just, you know, you're talking about printing limbs now for people who have lost limbs.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about, in the future, printing organs and, you know, basically extending life in many ways through this technology. You see kids just basically dreaming about what it is they might be able to do someday. And that is the magic of events like this, of whether it's a hacker event or an event outside like this one. It's something that just makes people... You know, for the older folks among us, you might remember something that took place pretty close to where Maker Faire takes place, the World's Fair from the early 1960s. you know, everybody who went to that as a kid still remembers it. They still remember the picture phones. You know, they still remember the various promises that were being planted in our minds as to what we might be doing in the future. Some of it we are doing, some of it we never did. But those events, they really are significant to young minds. And I think, you know, if you have a kid, it's really incumbent upon you to bring them to an event like this so that their imagination can really begin to flourish.
Absolutely. And 3D printing is a great example because, as you said, just a few Maker Faires ago, this was on display as like this crazy new thing that that people can do. These tools exist and you have access to them. And now it's kind of more of an accepted thing, but the wonder is now in what are people doing with them. And not only that, the tools are getting easier and easier to get hold of, but people are doing so many more things with them because they've had some time to play with them. And the stuff that you go to this Maker Faire and see is brand new and weird and out there, like, where's that going to be in another 5 years? That's going to be the sort of accepted workaday thing that we're now that now is a tool that everyone can use. So it's really wonderful to go to these not just once, but over the years and see where things go and where they've been and where they're headed.
Yeah, that is incredibly exciting for me as well. That's why I was saying, you know, that just to see people building their own kinds of equipment and hacking the tools that themselves were projects of other hackers and makers, just it just blows me away. And I'm not going to lie, I'm very seriously interested. I've been asking and talking to Rob about it and very interested in rapid prototyping and being able to do the same kinds of design. This is it. You know, you see students doing incredible stuff. You yourself, you can't help but start thinking, you know, what would it take to maybe incorporate that in this idea that I had? And all of a sudden your idea is an object, you know, right there, and then you can maybe test it out. That is an incredible, incredible technology, and I'm a little I'm inspired, and I can't help but wish that I had the same kinds of tools. But it was still emerging, you know, when I was a student, and now I'm, you know, basically able to observe and see what is basically you know, encouraged in the classroom today. And as an adult, I just really love embracing it and learning it myself. You can't let students have all the fun, you know, with some of the stuff. It's really just inspiring and, as you said, can make an impact and further your project. I just want to say the phone booth, too, that emerged kind of from our participation. One thing you notice at Maker Faires, and Rob mentioned this with the sandals, packaging for your project can be anything. It doesn't necessarily have to just be a box with the thing in it. And yeah, you can turn these on. Well, why not? If I'm going to hack stuff, I want to walk around. So of course I'll build some sandals for my wireless hacking software and hardware to fit in. And so we started playing around with the idea of what if we could make a switch in a small container and connect up all these phones, and what if we got a phone booth? And then it sort of evolved into this big thing. So now I guess we call it like a tapped telemegaphone, and basically we've got two phones or three phones connected, and people can try it out, and then we can amplify it so people can hear the conversation in between as though they're being sort of eavesdropped on, but we just blare it out along with all the other music. And
it is so cool to see kids coming up and just playing with rotary phones.
Oh,
some
yes.
Don't even know how to make a rotary phone call, so they're pressing the numbers and looking at it like it's from outer space, but others get it right away. Others really are appreciative of this old technology, just like, you know, sometimes young people like old cameras with film. Well, similarly, they like old telephone equipment, as we do as well, because it tends to last forever. And on that subject, passing a message to Rob,
mm-hmm.
Ironically enough, the reason we can't get through to our guests is because their cell phone died.
Oh.
So we have an alternate number that we have emailed you, so if you could connect to that, then we can actually talk to somebody. But I think
okay,
that
I've got it.
Shows
so,
how technology
I will...
can backfire sometimes.
Okay, I've got that, so I will make use of that and turn it over to you guys for a minute.
Okay, well, I mean, I just want to continue on that note. This is not necessarily all about high technology. If you find yourself as somebody who isn't that much into computers, robots, whatever, you think maybe you don't have as as many skills as the 6 or 7 year olds these days. You're probably right, because we don't. What these kids are doing today just simply is mind boggling. But it's not all about that. It's about just, you know, letting your mind go free. And here's an example. Something called the beer duck. Yeah, the beer duck. It's a waterfowl delivering your beer when you're out for a swim, boat, float, or any other water activity. It's a remote-controlled duck. Well, it's not a real duck, obviously. It's a beer duck. You stick a beer in it. It has a 3D-printed outboard motor, and your favorite beer tucks snugly on its back, and it'll go wherever you send it. So these kinds of toys can do all kinds of things. And you know, whether or not you design something or are just into looking at things, look at the tiny homes. Have you seen this, Kyle? I know you're into tiny homes.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a controversial thing now. Apparently, it's not all it's cracked up to be. People want bigger tiny homes. What do they got
now? Tiny homes. I want smaller tiny homes. But here's one. It's a 54-square-foot self-sustaining micro home. It measures 6 feet wide by 10 feet long, 9 feet high. It's self-sustaining, solar power, water tanks, a composting toilet. It's been lived in full time since October 2017, and you can see that at Maker Faire. So this kind of thing is just, it's so wildly inspiring and also so completely full of a variety of different things that it'll just leave your head spinning.
Awesome. You guys, I've just tied some soup cans and string together and got this working, so we should have our guest with us on the line.
Awesome. Is this Sabrina?
Yeah, hey there.
Hey, it's Sabrina. Great. Sorry about your phone.
I know. It's, you know, we're in show mode here, and then, you know, I think the phone's been working overtime and hit bottom there, but we're here. We're here together.
Okay. We're speaking with Managing Director Sabrina Merlo.
Correct.
And, I can only imagine the anticipation you guys are feeling. We've been talking about this nonstop now for about 20 minutes with our enthusiasm,
great.
But you guys know all the things that are going to be happening in the next a few days. Can you tell us something about the
preparation? Like you guys have been doing your homework there, talking about the tiny homes. That's new this year. And I think that it is super interesting, this like exploration of, you know, resourcefulness and what how folks can sort of design for efficiencies, right, and sustainability. And that is definitely a scene where individuals or groups are kind of owning those experiments in living. So we've got some community-driven examples of people doing different, you know, versions of alternative architecture. That's kind of cool. And we have actually this year we brought in also a homegrown village for the first time. We've done that in the Bay Area quite a few times, but we've got more kind of food-centric stuff in a hands-on homegrown workshop stage. For people to do things like make bitters or, you know, other kinds of food-oriented hands-on making activities. We're all super excited. It's a slow build manifestation. We got into Queens. I guess we started building out on Thursday. The first tent dropped. So it's all seeming very, very near, and we're super excited.
And I should point out that this is a rain or shine event. In the event that it rains, there's plenty of activity indoors as well. But since we've had a tropical storm roll through here, we had about 2 weeks straight of rain before that, I think we're safe for this weekend. I think this will be a sunny and rather pleasant weekend.
Either way, it's definitely worth
coming out, too. And it's easy to get to on the number 7 train.
Yes, it is. It's super easy. We saw a tweet go around, actually, someone analyzing the weather, saying this might be the best weather year for Maker Faire in recent memory. So we're hoping that's true, but there is tons to do both in the indoor and outdoor.
Can you tell us how people can get there if they're driving?
Yeah, we have it's actually very easy to find all of our Getting to Maker Faire instructions online at makerfaire.com/ALT, A-L-T. That is the homepage for all of our transpo, from bikes to train and public transportation and parking. We have parking at City Fields and shuttles that get you from City Fields closer to the show.
And so, I know last year, there was, I'm sorry, last year there was a concert taking place at the same time, which caused some competition for parking. But I think this
year... We don't have that issue this year.
That's a relief.
Excellent.
That really is. And the website is Maker Faire. That's spelled MakerFaire. A lot of people don't know about the E at the end. .com.
That is correct.
And you can find out all kinds of information there. Now, do you folks still need volunteers?
We can always put folks to some meaningful work in exchange for tickets. I believe there's also plenty of information about our traveler program online at makerfaire.com. If you have interest in putting some work in exchange for a ticket, there are opportunities there for that.
Okay, and we will have an opportunity in just a few minutes for some of our listeners to get a couple of free tickets as well. But I just wanted to talk about some of the other things that are going on this year. Now, I know you guys are really big into robots, and there's robot battles, I think, going on.
Yeah, we have tremendous amount of robotics. Mass Destruction coming in from Massachusetts has a whole series of competitions going on. There's a lot of FIRST Robotics participants, and then there's, of course, sort of iterations and creativity around people's different robots for different purposes. So there's sort of varying levels of robots. And then we have maybe we would call it a robot, but, you know, if you want to think about it, our giant, our machine, at least, our the hand of man that will be doing some interesting demonstrations of hydraulic strength with its 26-foot arm reach. It's controlled by a glove with riddled with sensors, and the operator wears the glove, and the giant hand basically mimics the behaviors of the hand in the glove. So a child can, by proxy, pick up and crush cars, for example.
Wow.
That's by artist Christian Risto.
Brilliant.
It's a fabulous piece.
Talking of art, I know you've got something else new that I'm pretty excited about. It's the first time you're doing this. You're having a cosplay prop contest at Maker Faire, and that's something I'm a fan of. But for those unfamiliar, how does that work?
Well, we were talking with some friends. Actually, the whole thing started out of a conversation with Adam Savage, who
we know him.
was you know who that guy is?
He spoke at our convention.
Yeah,
in the past.
At health conference.
Yeah.
So we were having conversation about it, and when we were talking with some folks in the cosplay community, that was in a way we thought a great angle for trying to generate a little bit more folks coming out who are doing the making in the cosplay world. And so we have had a competition. Entries they're still open, but the formal deadline was actually Tuesday night. We'll be doing sort of the live showcase of those props and the competition on Sunday at 1 p.m. on our auditorium, our main stage.
Excellent. And of course, during Maker Faire, also apart from scheduled events, there are also just people walking around in the most interesting outfits and costumes and creative expressions. I think last time we saw a gorilla and a Ghostbuster and whatever else. But there's just so much creativity going on in every possible medium, I think, on display both at the fair itself and just among the attendees. And that's something that I love.
I agree with you. I think that's why we're all so drawn to it. It's the range of creativity that's showcased at Maker Faire that's kind of inspiring, and the appreciation across disciplines, right? Like that you can you have this audience that's inspired by like the deeply technical. Maybe it's these innovations in robotics or in digital fabrication, but also just in the plain goofy or even, you know, craft, like learning how to do lace making or, learning how to make kombucha or whatever that is. It's really this celebration of that engagement and that sort of open source culture. People just really interested in kind of learning and sharing what they know.
Sabrina, can I ask how you got involved in the whole maker movement?
Sure. Well, I've been on the team at Maker Faire since 2010, and I came to Maker Faire actually. I was as an attendee with my two little kids the very first year. I've been a part of the art and technology community in San Francisco Bay Area for, I don't know, most of my life. And so when Maker Faire, the first Maker Faire happened, it was my community really that participated. People that I had done projects with. I worked with a robotics group called Survival Research Laboratories in San Francisco. I was had worked at the Exploratorium there, museum in San Francisco, a science and museum of perception, human perception. So it was in some ways an organic evolution, my involvement in Maker Faire as an attendee, then as a maker. And then I started one of the very first mini Maker Faires in my town of Oakland, California.
Okay.
So I really spent since 2010 until earlier this year, I drove primarily the growth of the global Maker Faire network and all of the mini Maker Faires and also the featured fairs around the world. So now we're at over 200 Maker Faires in 44 countries last year, which is really just kind of an astonishing bottom-up explosion of maker culture around the world.
That's amazing. And when you say it's from Oakland, I can see where a lot of inspiration comes from. That's mm-hmm. one of my favorite cities right now, having visited it recently.
Mine too.
We love how the train goes straight down the street, like Jack London Square.
You guys, we are running low on time, and we have something we have to do because we're talking about Maker Faire.
Thank you for reminding me. We are giving away a couple of pairs of tickets to the Maker Faire, World Maker Faire, taking place this weekend at the Hall of Science in Queens. What you must do is email us at oth@2600.com and say you want two tickets. You can have either a pair of tickets for Saturday, a pair of tickets for Sunday, or you can have one ticket for Saturday and one ticket for Sunday, as long as the number is two at the end. And we have two pairs like this. So the first two people who write in request this and don't confuse us too badly, we'll get those, and we will send you the tickets by email. Yes, you have to have email in order to do this, oth@2600.com. And also, if you have won in the past, you are not eligible for this. This is for people who have not won in the past. So good luck to everybody, oth@2600.com. And those of you who aren't able to get free tickets, it is well worth going. We can't mention prices on the air, but we can say that this is a worthy cause. And that, Sabrina, how many people do you estimate will be showing up at this?
Oh, I think we're somewhere in the range of probably 70,000 to 80,000 over the 3 days. We have a Friday education forum for those of you out there that are educators. I believe there's still some tickets left for our Make Education Forum, which is a really interesting opportunity to kind of get the lowdown from the experts and thinkers and doers in the maker education world. So that we start, everything starts Friday morning, really, for us.
I imagine it starts a lot earlier than that for putting this together. We just had the conference in July, and we're still recovering from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have an incredible team. I will say we are a team of makers behind Maker Faire, and I think some of the energy around Maker Faire emanates right from the center in terms of the people that put on the show. It's really an incredible group of people with a myriad range of talents and real commitment to the show. People, our forklift drivers come back to the show every year. It's a very special group of people.
I want to issue congratulations. The tickets are gone. Congratulations to Jerry and to Finn for winning the two pairs of tickets that we had. Anybody else who is still typing a message, you might as well stop because we've given away the tickets. But thank you very much for participating, for listening, and please come anyway because it's going to be an awesome event, well worth I mean, we've been talking nonstop about it for the last 40 minutes or so, and we could continue going. It's fun. It is so much fun. And I'll tell you, Sabrina, I'd love to go to one of these other events in another part of the country. I've never been to the Bay Area Maker Faire, which is, I believe, even bigger than the World Maker Faire here in New York.
It is. There are, next weekend, if you're like Maker Faire Milwaukee is a 60,000 person event. There are, Maker Faire Orlando is coming up. That's an incredible event as well. Check out makerfaire.com/map for a picture of all the maps and the calendars of Maker Faires coming up near you.
Wow. Sabrina, is there anything else that you'd like to tell us, maybe preview some other things, any particular displays or speakers or events that you want to make sure people don't miss?
Well, other highlights, we have Adam Savage for the first time at Maker Faire New York. He's coming with his the new cast of MythBusters Jr., which is really great to see. They're taking a pretty straight approach to MythBusters Challenge and not dumbing it down for the kids. So that's going to be an interesting one. We have so many great presenters on stage, like Alon Lee. We have Aya Badir, founder of Little Bits. I mean, it's just an incredibly deep and rich catalog. An opportunity to connect and rub elbows with really an incredibly inspiring and inspired creative bunch of people. Really, really encourage folks who are slightly tempted to try to make the trip. There's so much going on. Check out the schedule, for all kinds of activities. We have a whole range. We rolled out a whole bunch of deeper dive workshops this show. So people can actually do like hour or 2 hour long kind of deeper dive things as an experiment, trying to get some more maker chops.
This is something that spans the globe. I'm just looking now at some of the featured makers that you have, and I see one that really captured my interest: autonomous robot to carry bricks. And this comes from India. There are I believe 5 young makers behind this. A group of students from India, they created an autonomous robot that can take bricks from one place to another place with manual loading and unloading. It works based on a count of the number of bricks and uses a line-following mechanism to navigate around the place. And that is going to be just interesting to watch as it operates.
There's actually quite a range of international makers. This really is World Maker Faire. I think we have people from 20 countries, around 20 countries. I could be wrong, but I think it's close to that, who are showing. There's another good one that's kind of in that range of making for good that's called the Chi-Fi Kettle, which is a kettle that generates Wi-Fi, like a tea kettle for low-bandwidth areas. There's
a good combination.
Really darling. Go ahead.
That's a good combination.
Yeah, I know, and I love the name, the Chi-Fi, right?
There's a cotton candy robot, too, I hear.
Oh, those guys are amazing. So I met them at Maker Faire Cairo, and it's a group of ferociously talented young robotics kids into robotics, and this was their idea of a fun project, not a serious competitional project, but it just won my heart. It's darling, and they came all the way from Egypt to show at Maker Faire New York.
Well, we have to see that, and if we have to push the 2600 van there, we're going to do it. We're going to make it there somehow, and really looking forward to this, and I hope we meet a lot of listeners there as well, in addition to all kinds of other people from around the globe. World Maker Faire takes place at the Hall of Science in Queens, reachable by the 7 train. There's all kinds of transportation information at makerfaire.com. That's makerfaire.com. Takes place this Saturday and Sunday, September 22nd and 23rd. What are the operating hours?
It's 10 to 6 both days.
Great. And definitely make an appearance, whether it's for one day or both days, and be inspired, because this it really is the future here. We haven't even touched upon space travel, but I know whenever you get kids and science together, the topic of space comes up, and there'll be plenty of talk about that, I'm sure.
That's what it should.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you guys so much for your ongoing support of Maker Faire. We really appreciate your commitment to an interest in the event. It really means a lot.
Well, we look forward to seeing you there, and we look forward to seeing the tens of thousands of other people.
Very cool.
All right.
Thank you for joining us, Sabrina.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
See you at Maker Faire.
Right. Bye.
Yeah, and we are just about out of time here, but yes, come to Maker Faire. Come see us at Maker Faire. Look for the 2600 van, because I truly love when we get to speak with our listeners about stuff, because, you know, usually this is a one-directional conversation, being a broadcaster. So.
And if you see the 2600 van pulled over to the side of one of the roads leading to Queens, won't you pull over and give us a hand, as we're probably in trouble of some sort. We just have to get the van there. It doesn't actually have to run. It just has to get there. That's what we're shooting for right now. And the future, who knows?
Absolutely. Well, send us email at oth@2600.com. Follow us on Twitter, Hacker Radio Show. You can also follow us on Mastodon, hackerradioshow@mastodon.social. And, we hope to see you there. Have a wonderful week.
Good night.
Louis Vuitton bag to mix, say Versace jeans and DVDs from your dad's May. Wallet, watches and some songs off the radio, tweaking your expensive claim. Now tell me honestly, is your software bought and paid for? Have you ever photocopied from a book? Now okay, we can't pretend that we're sailing close to legal, but hypocrisy